Good morning. Welcome to the press briefing. Today is Friday, 27th of June, here at the UN in Geneva. And we will start immediately with our topic of the day, who is the health crisis. In addition to Dr. Rick Peeperkorn, that I don't need to introduce to you anymore, and thanks very much, Rick, to be here, we also have another colleague, Luca Pigozzi, who is also from WHO and who is coming in from Gaza. He is, as you know, emergency medical team coordinator in Gaza for WHO. So I will give the floor maybe to Christian first to introduce and give the floor. I don't know who wants to start from the field. Christian, you want to start? And then we go to our invitees.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Alessandra. I mean, you did the job already. So thank you very much for Rick, and very glad to also have in the current situation Dr. Luca with us last moment to talk right out of Gaza while Rick is talking from Jerusalem. And over to you, Rick.
Good morning. I hope you can hear me loud and clear.
Loud and clear, Rick.
Okay, good morning, Alessandra. Good morning to all. Greetings from Jerusalem. So I want to start with a bit of focus on the West Bank first, and then I will switch over to Gaza and hand over to my colleague, Dr. Luca Pigozzi, for a specific topic. So on the West Bank, we really want to stress that the health crisis in the West Bank is worsening. It's driven by intensified military prisons and operations, rising settler violence, repeated attacks on healthcare, and severe access restrictions that continue to obstruct delivery of vital services. Let me focus on access to healthcare. Of the 559 health facilities assessed by WHO in June, 71 health facilities, including 43 Ministry of Health facilities, face partial accessibility due to insecurity, physical barriers. We see closures, including earth mounds, road gates, blocking entrances to some villages, frequent and limited hour checkpoint operations continue to obstruct access to healthcare for patients and ambulances. Almost 7,000 people in 10 communities in Area C have minimal access to primary healthcare due to access restrictions, delays, checkpoints, and specifically Nablus, Salfit, Qalqiya, etc., frequent gate closures in Hebron, and refusal issue permits in Jenin mobile clinical team, so preventing them from to reach those communities in the so-called Area C and obstructing their rights and their needs to access to health. In some areas, full closure imposed during military operations or access is obstructed by closed gates for ongoing movement restrictions, ambulances must secure prior coordinations to transfer patients, adding 4 to 5 hours to delays and putting lives at risk. To avoid these delays, families are often forced to carry patients to the gates where they must cross on foot to reach the ambulances waiting on the other side. When you talk about attacks on healthcare, again, a mandate of the WHO to report, to analyze, and to report on. As of mid-June 2025, WHO documented 844 attacks on healthcare in the West Bank since October 23, resulting in 31 deaths and 168 injuries. Attacks affected 65 health facilities, 24 mobile clinics, 567 ambulances. 67% of the attacks occurred in the cities around Tulkarem, Jenin, and Nablus. They include attacks on health infrastructure, ambulances, detention of health workers and patients, obstruction of their access to health facilities, use of force on health workers, and militarized searches of ambulances and staff. So when you talk about healthcare availability overall, there's another issue, and we've raised it, I think, in the past as well. The long-standing fiscal crisis faced by the Palestinian Authority is further impacting the health system and has been worsened by the Israel's increased withholding of tax revenues meant for the occupied Palestinian territory since 7 October 2023, and the overall deteriorations of economic situation in the OPG. So of the 476 government health service units assessed by WHO and partners, only 345 are fully functional. The primary constraints, effective functionality, are staff shortages due to many health workers not receiving or partly receiving their salaries, and lack of supplies. According to the Ministry of Health, just to talk about supplies, 16% of the total essential medicines, 40% of the medical consumables, and 9% of the lab supplies are at zero top balance. 7 vaccines, including Rota, BCG, pneumococcal vaccines, in addition to MAN2 tests, are completely depleted with reported delays in shipments. Critical shortages are reported for anti-rabies vaccine, essential lab supplies, emergency medication, including paracetamol in some instances. So these shortages stem from limited local market availability and increase in the price of essential medical supplies. Recurrent border closures and increasing restrictions, imposing limits on the import medical supplies and medicines. So what are we doing? What is WHO doing? So we supported the Ministry of Health with procurement of essential medications. We pre-positioned supply at key hospitals across the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, to cope with the current shortages of medicines. We bring in specific equipment to respond to mass casualty incidents have been pre-positioned in 7 key Ministry of Health hospitals along the West Bank. We conduct community trauma management training for first aid responders in the affected communities to boost emergency preparedness and allow them to provide timely care to those injured in case of delays of ambulance arrival due to access restrictions. We support out a role of training for health work on newborn and child health. And we have supported 200 UNRWA health workers primary working in refugee camps trained on primary trauma care. Let me shift now to Gaza Strip and after that to my colleague, Dr. Luca. So just 2 days ago, on 25th of June, WHO delivered its first medical shipment into Gaza since the 2nd of March. We've had the long blockade, aid blockade, all the issues around that. So 9 trucks carrying essential medicines, including 2,000 units of blood and 1,500 units of plasma. The supplies were transported from Kerem Shalom without any looting incidents, despite the high risk conditions along the route. It was meticulously planned. And I really want to thank the team, the WHO team at all levels, but also the One UN and the Ministry of Health community and the community leaders to make sure that these medical supplies and the blood units were in straight away delivered to the hospitals and to the WHO warehouses. So the supplies will be further on distributed to priority hospitals in the coming days. And I said blood and plasma were directly delivered to National Medical Complex cold storage facilities. From there, they will go to onward distribution to other hospitals facing critical shortages among a growing influx of injuries, many linked to incidents at the so-called food distribution site. The delivery of blood and plasma are extremely critical, given Gaza was about to run out and needs are immense. Health facilities, which under normal circumstances require approximately 3,000 blood units per month, are now facing an estimated demand for 4,500 to 8,000 units monthly. This increase is driven by the frequent mass casualty incidents we see, the nature of the complex blast injuries, and the rising number of surgical and obstetric emergencies. Blood is also needed to support some patients with chronic diseases. The mission is ongoing to get 4 other WHO trucks today from Kerem Shalom, and they are hopefully en route as well, and we hope to have the same results. However, in conclusion, I want to really make the point. These medical supplies, which are now delivered and delivered safely, so we thank everyone for that, they are a drop in the ocean. We need so much more medical aid, medical supplies, essential medicines. It's there. There is tons of trucks waiting in Al Arish and at other places, not just from WHO. Just want to mention other UNHCR, UNFPA, UNICEF, etc. They also have trucks lined up. So we call for an immediate, unimpeded, and sustained delivery of health aids into Gaza through all possible routes. Next week, I plan to be asked for another mission, and we will plan another update for you from there. Over now to Dr. Luca Pigozzi for some additional information on Gaza, with a focus on emergency medical teams. Luca, over to you.
I see Luca. Yes, you've just disappeared. Let me see if we can catch you again. Dr. Pigozzi. I don't see you anymore. You appeared, and let me see for my colleagues if we can catch you back. Christian, you have your hand up.
Just to say that I see him clearly on the screen, ready to talk. So
that's good. You see better than me then. If he's here, please just, Dr. Pigozzi, go ahead. I can't see him, but okay, now we've got him. I'm afraid there is an issue here. Luca, can you hear us?
I can now. I'm sorry.
Okay, then now we can hear you. Thank you very much. Go ahead. And we can see you. Good. Grazie, Luca. Prego.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for having me here. As was announced by Dr. Rick Peppercorn, I am going to just deep dive a bit on the emergency medical teams and their impressive contribution to this response under the coordination of the WHO. So the EMTs, emergency medical teams, are structured groups of medical professionals who deploy either nationally or internationally to respond to public health emergencies or humanitarian crises. Specifically in the Gaza response, under the coordination of WHO, we could deploy more than 50 teams in total. We created three trauma stabilization points in different moments of the response, five field hospitals in total, providing more than 500 beds to indeed contribute to the distressed health system. And cumulatively, since January 2024, the EMTs provided 3 million of medical consultations. So they doubled the population of Gaza in their assistance in terms of patient care, and they performed more than 40,000 surgical interventions. It's really remarkable in terms of efforts and contribution to the overall response and provision of high quality medical care. When we come to challenges, as it was mentioned before, one of the major challenges that is hampering at the moment the ability of EMTs to perform medical care is the lack of medical supply and equipment. It's important to remember that almost 50% of the medical stock is completely depleted across the Gaza Strip. And what we have been entering since 2 days is only a drop in the ocean. I really want to quote again my colleague, Dr. Rick Peppercorn, on that. Secondly, another major challenge is represented by safety and security, including for healthcare workers and healthcare facilities. Healthcare facilities, ambulances, and workers have become under attack more and more. The two major hospitals in the Gaza Strip, specifically Shifa Medical Complex and Nasser Medical Complex, have been under attack persistently since the beginning of the crisis. And in different times of the response, they had to force to shut down their entire activities, leaving lacks in critical secondary and tertiary medical services. Definitely the EMTs reacted and tried to reactivate these surgical, maternal care, and services relating to internal medicine, intensive care unit, and hemodialysis, but definitely not enough. And we don't have the guarantees that security can improve and ameliorate anytime soon. Finally, the access to the strip. Procedures are highly bureaucratic and difficult, and we are facing high rate of denials, for international medical staff, including EMTs, to come into Gaza. And that's also something that is impeding very much the deployment of these teams and the performance of their medical activities. So in conclusion, under the coordination of WHO, many teams, including 1,000 foreigners, doctors, and nurses, have been deployed into Gaza Strip to boost the health response. But this is, again, not enough. And we definitely ask for more security and safety conditions for them to operate, more access to medical supply, and physical access for these medical professionals to enter into Gaza Strip. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Luca, and thanks, Rip Peppercorn. Just wanted to, well, I'll say this later on, but let's open the floor to questions now. Start with Olivia Podvin at Reuters.
Thanks very much, both of you, for this briefing. I was just wondering, Dr. Peppercorn or Dr. Pigozzi, if you could just explain why the trucks have now been allowed in, because I appreciate it's been some time that they've been thwarted from entering. So what changed to allow those first trucks in? And just on the four trucks that are currently en route into the strip, what are they carrying? Is that also kind of the same blood units that you were talking about, or kind of other specific medications or equipment? And I just wanted to check on the West Bank, Dr. Peppercorn, that you said 844 attacks on healthcare since October 23. Is that October 23 last year or October 2023? Thank you.
Who wants to answer, Rick or Luca or both? Just show me your hand because I can't see. Luca, I see you smiling. Yeah, oh, Rick, go ahead.
Yeah, let me start, and then Luca can maybe add. So on the West Bank, that the number of attacks was since October 2023. So 844 attacks on healthcare in the West Bank since October 2023, resulting in 31 deaths and 168 injuries. On your other question, I think We had the aid blockade. I think it was for almost 12 weeks, and then small supplies. I think UN was again allowed to bring in limited supplies. We've seen WFP doing that. We had, of course, and I think we raised that in I think in former briefings, that for WHO and actually for other health partners as well, most of our supplies were stocked and stored at Al Arish. And we constantly ask to open that route, to open all routes. And I think we raised this constantly. 33 trucks were ready to go directly from Al Arish, and another 20 would be ready at any moment as well. And more supplies would be coming in. We changed now the route. So we also, with WHO Dubai Hub, where a lot of the WHO medical supplies actually are stored for global emergencies, we plan then for a large flight supported by ECHO, by the EU, to come to Ben Gurion. Then, of course, fortunately, we got in, and that all is very costly. It adds to the cost, but anyway, we planned all for that. And then we got into the unfortunate Israel-Iran war, and Ben-Gurion is closed. So we're still planning to get that plane in and then make sure it gets into Gaza. Fortunately, a lot of discussion, initially we were not allowed to get our supplies from the West Bank directly into Gaza, WHO supply. A lot of negotiations, I don't want to go into detail, a lot of shifting of goalposts. So finally we were allowed, and that is what you saw, that 9 trucks 2 days ago, and hopefully the 4 trucks today. It's a mixture of, when I also thank the Ministry of Health for that, a mixture of very much needed blood and blood products, but of course a whole mixture of essential medicines and medical supplies needed. And as my colleague also already said, and we've persistently said, there's a huge shortage in almost everything and coming to Gaza very regularly, it's not just, people always talk about trauma. So everything related to trauma supplies is a short supply. Something like an external fixator, always in short supply. But also very simple things, gloves, gowns, etc., IV fluids, everything related to infection prevention and control is a huge issue. Simple drugs like insulin, more complex drugs like the oncology drugs, the cancer drugs, etc. Everything is in short supply. So we need a constant flow. And we've seen that we could do that when we had a ceasefire. So we of course, were all, it was really great news on this ceasefire between Israel and Iran. We hope that we will soon get better news. There will be a ceasefire for Gaza. And then access is possible through all routes in. WHO, but also UN partners are very ready to increase and speed up. There's a plan. We've shown it worked. We raise this constantly, etc. Make it happen. And two other points I want to raise on Gaza, because I think I forgot it. It is, I think, very important to also raise fuel. There's a huge issue. There's a huge lack of fuel in Gaza. There is currently, and UNOPS is trying to do a fantastic job in retrieving fuel within Gaza, but there's an absolute need to get new fuel in from outside Gaza. Without fuel, everything stops. For us, working with health, hospitals, etc., and everything that we discussed, not just cold storage and vaccines, etc., ICUs, you name it, everything stopped. But fuel is critically important for water and water production, etc., desalination plants, etc. By mid-June, 93% of the households face water insecurity, exacerbating thirst, public health risks. Without water, infection prevention, hospitals will become impossible, leading to spread of diseases, which we already see. And when you talk about malnutrition, maybe just one small detail I want to say. On average, one of the 12 children have been admitted daily for treatment of acute malnutrition since the start of the year. But the situation is set to deteriorate if conditions do not change immediately. Luca, maybe you want to add something on this. Thanks.
Go ahead, Luca.
Thanks. No, I fully agree with what was said already by Dr. Rick Peppercorn. The situation is absolutely stretched and extreme. I would also want to shed the light on non-communicable diseases. It's important to remember that 84% of mortalities prior to the war in Gaza was caused by exacerbation of non-communicable diseases. Although now, of course, trauma needs are increasing because of the intense warfare, it's also important to remember that the risks for the population to become sick, but also to exacerbate their chronic conditions is more and more there. It's very much important that also people have access to specialized care, eventually even outside of the Gaza Strip through the medical evacuations corridor, with more states who can take in charge patients and provide advanced medical care. For example, I'm speaking about cancer care, and definitely also to the needs related to primary and secondary healthcare to prevent further deterioration of non-communicable diseases. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Nina Lars, AFP.
Yeah, thank you very much. So I had a follow-up on Olivia's question first. When it comes to the trucks, it was unclear to me what specifically has changed in, I guess, Israel's attitude, or if, when it comes to these trucks getting through, and also what you think needs to happen today for four other trucks to go through. And then I had another question on if I was wondering if it would be possible to comment on the $30 million dollars that the U.S. now plans to inject into the GHF. I mean, it's. Do you think that's a good idea, and what does that sort of say about? At the same time as the U.S. is removing support for other aid efforts, at the same time as we're hearing that Israel again has seems to be blocking some aid over Hamas alleged Hamas intervention. So I was wondering if you could sort of say what that situation, what's going on with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Nina. And the same question also comes from Associated Press on the chat. Our correspondent, Jamie Keaton, says, can Dr. Pigozzi give his reaction to U.S. plan to inject $30 million into GHF, both in terms of the amount of money and the message it sends that GHF is getting more and official U.S. support? What is the effect? Sorry, I have to move this. What is the effect of such GHF aid on the ground, and how much does it help the health of people in Gaza? So maybe this time, Luca, you start, and then Rick can complement.
Sure, and thanks a lot for the question. I think that Dr. Peppercorn is in a better position to take this question, so I will pass the floor to him. Thank you very much.
Okay, Rick.
Yeah, let me first clarify. So the four trucks which we are collecting today, that was our decision to pick it up today, because the last time there were, we took nine trucks, and one of the trucks was broken at Kerem Shalom, so we had to leave it there with a considerable amount of pallets for trucks. So that was so there's nothing to do with delays by Israel. I think the I want to stress actually that is in total we're talking about 14 trucks, including the blood and plasma, etc. When everything was ready after meticulously planned, we got I would say proper facilitation also from COVID and CLA, because we passed relatively quickly and we could do it the same day, and we carried on and we took the nine trucks directly to the warehouse and the blood and plasma to the hospital, as I described. And today we collect the other four trucks, and I hope that we will have the same results. We also get information. So there was, of course, hope that when the aid blockade was on for way too long. And I think we have had many press conferences. The UN has been very clear on this as well. And so only recently, a couple of weeks ago, UN and partners were allowed to get some trucks in. We all raised it. There's been way too limited. Of course, it went with a lot of problems, and new routes had to be planned, etc. I mean, for us, I explained already to you the difficulties. For us, it's much easier to get the bulk of our supplies from Al-Arish through Kerem Shalom into Gaza than getting it from here, or getting it now, flying it in from the Dubai hub, etc., etc. So other parties face the same problems. But what we have seen is way too few, and I don't like to talk about trucks, but there are way too few trucks coming into Gaza in all areas, and specifically when you talk about food and non-food items, etc. With regard to the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, I don't want to say too much about it. I think the Secretary General, and maybe also Christian, want to say something about that. But I think UN has been very clear about this. So and we've been discussing this as well over it has been discussed in many fora, etc. So I don't want to I don't want to raise any more issues. What I can say, and that has been constantly raised, the UN has a system in place The UN and its partners, the humanitarian partners, has a system in place, and it has proven that it works. Not just during the ceasefire, even before. It works, so let it happen and open the routes and make sure that we can get our supplies in, not just for health, specifically for foods. The market needs to be flooded with food and non-food items and water, etc., etc., and including essential medicines in the most cost-effective manner. And that is what the UN is not a plan. The plan, there was a plan, it works. It has been working, and specifically when we are facilitated to do our job. So let us do our job. And we also see in the news the issues that we again seem to have difficulties now getting new trucks in. That's really unfortunate and should not happen, because you don't want to see those desperate people, and specifically desperate young men risking their life to get some food here left or right. And let me say also one thing on that. What our team see, not only that some of those supplies end up at the market where they're being sold, but and people cannot afford that. But specifically, the ones who need it most, and think about female-headed households, think about handicapped people. That's why you need to bring in those supplies to the many points which are all there in Gaza, where they can distribute this to the people who need it. And what we see as WHO, we see the results of all this, the really nasty results. We read reports, etc. We are not there at that. He said what we see, our team sees in the hospitals when they bring the prioritized and scarce supplies and a little bit of fuel, when they help with mass casualty management, training, etc., when they assist the emergency medical teams, which are so much needed, what do they see? Nearly 500 people have died in these mass casualty incidents over the last week, trying to get food, etc. And we see what kind of, and then we see hundreds of people being injured. And which will affect themselves for life. Horrible injuries, and we see the, of course, the bullets, everything related to gunfire, etc. And this is what we see. We see the result of all of that. It has to stop. I saw in one article it was described as not my words. One of those articles was described as killing fields. We are not there. We see the results of all of that. And Luca and could be a little bit more specific, but from between 27th of May and 22nd of June, almost 500 people died trying to get food near sites and cells distribution. So this adds to enormous load at the hospitals. I mean, think about also all the people injured and all these horrific injuries to be treated. So let me stop here, and maybe Luca want to be a bit more specific on the type of injuries they see in the hospitals which receive those injured. Over to you.
In case, Luca, you want to say something, because the follow-up from AAP was exactly on what you just said, which is what's the effect of such GHF aid on the ground on the health side. So I think you have answered to that. I don't know if Luca wants to add something. Otherwise, I'll go to the next question. Oh, and Nina has a follow-up. Luca? I don't know why I can't see Luca on my platform.
Yes, no,
oh,
yes.
Yeah, now you're there.
Yes, sorry. Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much for the question. I confirm that we are almost reaching 500 deaths following these aid distributions. This means more than five buses. So again, of people, which means that if it would have happened as an accident, a car accident, all the world would have speak about that. But since it's happening on daily basis in Gaza, I think it's still very important to discuss about that and the amount of casualties and deaths that these operations are causing. In terms of injuries that we are seeing, gunshot, definitely. People get shot. They are victim of blast injuries as well, and burn injury for sure. And with all the challenges that were described before, I think it's very also much important to understand that providing high quality medical care is very much difficult and hard, particularly because we are speaking about high volume of patients every time. Thanks.
Indeed. Nina, you had a follow-up.
Yeah, thank you. It was also on GHF. I mean, my understanding is some of the difficulty now, or the suspension of aid getting through, that the GHF has potentially been exempted from that. So they're getting aid in while others are not. Given the really dire situation around their aid distribution sites, what do you think about that? I guess unequal treatment. Thank you.
Who wants to take this?
Yeah, well, I think I tried to address these questions already on the GHF. I mean, enough has been said on the GHF, and I think not by me, the Secretary General, and all other levels. And maybe Christian wants to add something to that. So I think I'm not going back into this. What is absolutely needed, and I thought we saw a small opening that's let's say a number of the UN partners were recently allowed to get trucks in again, and we have seen a small increase, but absolutely not enough. There's a plan to get many more trucks in for food and for non-food items. So we almost pray that this will be allowed to happen, and every what I would say obstruction in between, because this was happening, this was starting to happening in, again, a much too at a scale which was much too small in relation to the needs, but it was starting to happen a little bit over the last week. Well, this needs to expand. What we get now also the news that again there is an obstruction. We hope that will be solved very soon, immediately. What I think we all probably had hoped that when the ceasefire was announced between Israel and Iran, that there would be a spillover to Gaza, and the attention would focus where it should be on Gaza, but also we would move into proper ceasefire there as well. In the meantime, what we have been raising constantly, not just for medical supplies, specifically food, fuel, water, everything related to wash and medical supplies, needs to get in at scale. And again, the UN partners are completely ready to do that and have proven that they're very capable of that. Over to you.
Thank you very much. There was also, I was looking, a lot of declarations from OCHA on this matter. Okay, so sorry, I have more questions in the room. Taha Hassan, APTN.
Yeah, thank you for giving me.
Alessandra, maybe just let me quickly add on that.
Sure, go ahead.
So sorry for who wanted just to ask. So thank just you. To repeat exactly as Alessandra also indicated, the colleagues from OCHA, from UNICEF, from WFP, I believe the Secretary General, everybody has been reiterating this over and over again. People are starving, people are sick, people are dying in Gaza on a daily basis. They have been killed on the way trying to get medical help. They have been killed inside hospitals. Now, additionally, they're being killed on the way to get food items, which are scarcely being provided. At the same time, we have food and medical help minutes away across the border, sitting there and waiting for weeks and months by now. Just open the door. That's all it needs.
Absolutely. I think we've been saying it time over and over again. Taha.
Thank you for giving us this overview. Concerning the humanitarian aid, do you have the right to reach those in need in all areas, or there are specific areas assigned to you in Gaza?
Luca?
Thanks for the question. We can reach all the areas, but it's important to remember that the population redistributed following the hostilities and following evacuation orders. It's important to remember that more than 80% of the entire Gaza Strip at the moment is under order of civilian evacuation. On the top of that, it's also important, as I mentioned before, that movements across the Gaza Strip are very much difficult because of security and safety constraints. So definitely we have access to the entire Gaza Strip, but in a very unsafe manner and environment, requiring a high level of coordination in order to move and mitigate as much as possible the risks related to our safety, and also remember about the population that redisplaced basically constantly since the beginning of the escalation, and definitely now more concentrated in different areas rather than the beginning of the war. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Maybe to add on this, what Luca is rightly saying is that currently the population in Gaza is actually situated on 80% of the overall Gaza Strip. So can you imagine? More than 2 million people on 18% of what used to be the Gaza Strip. It was already the most overpopulated sites in the world. So a lot of the other sites, as Luca rightly said, they are evacuation zones or whatever. There's also a number of militarized zones, including where some of those distribution points are. We cannot come to those militarized zones. And for every movement in Gaza, there's cumbersome process to make sure you can do this movement in a less risky way. And a lot of those movements, they are delayed or denied. We've reported on that as well, and on many of the missions, et cetera. So that is the situation we operate in. And then when it comes to the incidents, for example, and the mass casualty incidents, so we are definitely on the receiving ends. And I can mention another example, which we saw recent, I think, in Zikim in North Gaza, related to crowd surge at a food distribution point. Again, 8 fatalities, 185 injury, most of them were transferred to Shifa Hospital. Another was in near the Nisrin corridor in the south, targeted civilians waiting for aid, 23 fatalities and over 40 injuries, with patients were referred to multiple hospitals in the central areas. And this is, I think, was graphically described by Luca about the number of buses, which you would have if it would be in a car incident or a bus incident. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Mohamed Arslan, the Turkish news agency.
Thank you so much for this briefing. My question will be about the West Bank, occupied West Bank. As you mentioned, there is a increasing violence in the region recently, and according to reports, 3 people dead and many more injured in the east of Ramallah region of West Bank. My question is, how is the latest situation in Ramallah now? And if you have, can you share the latest number in terms of dead and injured people? Thank you.
Rick?
Thank you. I must say, I think I will have difficulty answering that whole question. I also read a report on the recent 3 people killed. We will try to get more details on that, and if we have that, we will also put them in the overview. Over to you.
Thank you very much. So let me go to the platform because there are more questions here. So Jamie, who has a problem with his mic, asks me to ask you, Rick. Dr. Peppercorn, thanks. You just said you hope that the ceasefire will also soon come to Gaza. Do you have any evidence or communication with Israeli authorities that might that might happen soon?
No, fortunately not. I wish I had. And I think maybe the only thing what I would say that's after this horrible lengthy aid blockade, 12 weeks, so we got some openings and that's being allowed again as the UN and partners to get some of the supplies in. And for us in health, we had a lot of discussions, negotiations about our supplies in the West Bank, and initially it was not allowed, etc. And we went back and forth, etc. And finally it was allowed. So that was my only kind of, I think you, actually everybody lives by hope that you say, hey, so after what happens with Iran and Israel and the ceasefire, so okay, you know, are we opening up again a little bit? But unfortunately, so we all hope for that. No, I didn't get any indication, and I will not be the first one informed from that. That's I'm sure about. But we still, of course, hope, and it would be by far the best. What we see today, that so a number of trucks were, well, as I said, there was some movement on trucks being allowed, both foods, non-food items, and health. And what we see now again in the news, that this is now again blocked for currently. That's not good news. We thought that we were on the road that it would open up, and there would be a plan to open up and to make sure that, first of all, Gaza needs to be again. Just what happened, maybe you remember in February 2024, we were a little bit of a similar situation. And then we had a similar situation, hardly any food was in. There was a shortage of supplies all over. Malnutrition was increasing all over the place, et cetera. And then finally, we were allowed to get supplies in again. And that initially, that was always the thing. You have to flood the markets to calm down the markets, to make sure prices go down. You have to flood the markets to make sure that you can reach the most vulnerable groups, and specifically female-headed households, people who are challenged, handicapped people, etc., which we are absolutely not reaching now. So, yeah, we have that hope that this would happen. And again, now we see again an current, I hope it's a blip, an obstruction. We hope, of course, that we move forwards. And I think I was not alone there. We all hoped after the ceasefire between Israel and Iran that the focus would be again where it should be, on Gaza. And, you know, we would work on the solution. And the solution starts with the ceasefire. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Rick. Indeed, it does. Iman Kerji, Kuwait News Agency.
Thank you so much. My question is in Gaza, actually. Doctor in Gaza reports that a complete shortage of baby formula. Do you have any figure in how many infants have died due to the lack of access of infant formula? Thank you so much.
Rick or Luca? We can't hear you.
Maybe I can.
Oh, yeah.
No, so, so we don't have any figures on that. Luca might add maybe on some specifics on malnutrition, what they witness on the ground. We definitely know there's a huge problem with infant formula getting in, and including for, I think, we had this conference, and I think already a month ago, and we were raising as well, I think when I was in Gaza, we raised the issue as well, that... also for WHO. The WHO and UNICEF are supporting some of those malnutrition treatment centers in a number of hospitals. A number of them are not working anymore, because that was, for example, in the north, in the north, in the hospital, which is non-functional now anymore, Kamal One, and then patient friendly, and then Nasser, etc. Now, we already warned then everyone that WHO was running out of this so-called specialized nutrition supplies, which are needed for those to treat malnutrition, etc. And UNICEF raised the same thing time and over again. They've raised that thing very specifically again. And they struggle, of course, to get that infant formula and everything in as well. Luca, maybe over to you, but I don't think we have any deep meat. We cannot link it. It's very difficult to link anything to, okay, that causes a death or something like that. Luca, over to you.
Thank you very much. I confirm, actually, it's important to remember that everything related to data on nutrition belongs to UNICEF as mandate, so definitely they have a better sense in terms of the overall burden on public health. What I can tell you is definitely that I witness on daily basis in the communities and in hospitals scarcity of food, high level of food insecurity, and surely also increasing admissions at secondary level for cases of severe acute malnutrition. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember James spoke about that in a few occasions. So maybe, Iman, you can also ask him again if they have any new information. Nick Amin-Bruce, New York Times.
Yeah, thanks for this. You mentioned that there was obstruction getting EMTs into Gaza. I wondered if you could just say how many teams are being blocked. Is this on a significant scale? And what are the reasons that teams are being denied entrance? And how does it work? Are the applications for these teams to enter being turned down, or are teams being approved and then just not being allowed to cross? Thank you.
Rick?
Yeah, Luca, I will give the specifics on that. But we've seen a trend, and I think over the last month, that specifically, there's a whole system in place, always a cumbersome system for people getting into Gaza, including the EMTs, emergency medical teams, NGOs, etc. And there's always people denied and refused. We also have had it ourselves. I mean, it's not just affecting NGOs, it's also affecting the UN, including ourselves. WHO also has been affected. You never get a reason, an explanation for that. So that is, it's very frustrating. But what we have seen over the last couple of months, that specifically health and the emergency medical teams are more affected than, let's say, the other sectors. And again, never with any explanation. Luca, maybe you, I don't know if you have some figures of that, over to you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot for the question. At the moment, the problem is not really that they are denying entire teams. So far, sorry, not so far. At the moment, currently, only one partner organization is not allowed to enter as organization. Whereas what we are experiencing is that the denials are targeting individuals. This means that the teams that we try to facilitate the entrance are, let's say, not completed, right? They miss some key components sometimes. So it's always also a great exercise of coordination to try to facilitate the deployments in order to make them as much effective as possible. Also considering the fact that the teams are never completed. In any case, in the last months, starting from March up to June, we are experiencing 44% of denial rate, which means that if we try to enter 10 individuals from different teams, 4 to 5 of them are denied per rotation. So I think it's really worrisome.
And I just would like to refer to the figures, the latest figures we have from OCHA. They are from 2 days ago, not yesterday, the day before. So they reported that 6 out of 17 attempts to coordinate humanitarian movements inside Gaza were outright rejected by the Israeli authorities. These planned UN missions included tracking water and repairing roads. 9 other attempts, which included the removal of solid waste and collection of cargo from the crossings, were facilitated by the Israeli authorities, while 2 additional attempts were impeded. The continuing restrictions on humanitarian access are severely undermining life-saving operations. And I think I have, oh no, there are no more hands up. Just before, so I think we, let me see. Yeah, no, there are no more hands up. So thank you very, very much, Rick and Luca, for being with us today. Both of you, stay safe, please, and continue updating us on your fundamentally important work. Before we leave the issue of Gaza, I just wanted to call your attention on the fact that today at 5:30 p.m. Geneva time, so it's 11:30 in New York, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres will speak to the press at the Security Council stakeout on the situation in the Middle East and Gaza. And he will take questions. And of course, this is something that you can follow up. You can follow on the UN Web TV. And immediately after, at 6 p.m. Geneva time, 12 o'clock in New York, so there won't be the noon briefing, but the Undersecretary General for Peace Operations, Jean-Pierre Lacroix, will brief reporters on his recent travels to the Middle East. And again, this is all available on UN Web TV. So thanks again. Christian, thanks for bringing us your colleagues. I don't think you have any other announcement, no? Don't think so. So that brings me to maybe give you a couple of other announcements. Always staying on press conferences also today, busy day in New York for reporters. The UN Deputy Secretary General Amina Mohammed will speak together with Rebecca Greenspan on the launch of the Secretary General's debt recommendation. This is ahead of the Financing for Development Conference in Sevilla. And that will be, as I said, at 6:45 p.m. Geneva time. Yes, that's yeah. And of course, and Mrs. Greenspan will join DSG Mohammed virtually. Today, the Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women is reviewing the report of Botswana, and the Human Rights Committee is concluding this morning the review of Chad. And the countries to come are Kazakhstan, Guinea-Bissau, North Macedonia, Latvia, Spain, Haiti, and Vietnam. I just wanted also to remind you of an invitation that you should have received by now. That's the next session of Cine ONU. It's a special one. It's an exceptional edition under the stars. We invite you to a free open-air screening of Simon's closed documentary film called Hacking Hate, which has awarded the Best Documentary Award at the Tribeca Film Festival. It offers a gripping look at online hate speech and the challenges of regulating it, so it should be of interest to all reporters here. It's going to happen on Thursday, 3rd of July at the Domaine des Pontes, so exceptionally not at the Cine ONU usual location in town, but in Prégnies-Chambézy at the Domaine des Pontes from 8 p.m., and we will be able to also have a discussion with human rights expert, UN human rights expert Birgit Kainz. And there will be snacks and drinks and activities such as self-defense, which is useful. So we will wait for you there in this beautiful setting. I think that's all I had for you. In terms of announcements, I've seen in the chat a request, and this is a request maybe, Christian, for you to share the notes of our colleagues in the West Bank and Gaza, in Jerusalem and Gaza. As the journalists are saying, they are full of figures, so it would be useful if you could share them quickly. Any other question for me? I don't see any hand up. So thank you very much. I wish you a very good weekend, and we'll see each other next week. Thank you. Oh, and Christian says we'll have the notes in a moment. Thanks. Thanks to everyone. Have a nice weekend.